The new book, City of Dreams, tells the story of how New York and our nation was built by immigrants, both famous and forgotten. More immigrants have come through New York than all other entry points combined. And these migrants have brought their many distinct cultures to the city and to the entire country. City of Dreams, the 400-year epic history of immigrant New York, is a combination of archival research, storytelling, and analysis of every major wave of immigration, from the 17th century Dutch to contemporary Chinese and West Indians. The author is Tyler Anbinder, a professor of history at George Washington University and the author of two previous prize-winning books, including 5 Points, The 19th Century New York City Neighborhood That Invented Tap Dance, Stole Elections, and Became the World's Most Notorious Slum, and Nativism and Slavery. Again, the new book is City of Dreams, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Professor Tyler Anbinder to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Give us a sense of what brought you to want to look at this epic history.
My last book was a book called 5 Points. It was about the Irish immigrant neighborhood in 19th century New York that was probably the most infamous slum in the world during the American Civil War period. And as I worked on that book, you know, for every great story I would find about 5 Points, I would find 10 that occurred outside of that 4-by-6-block neighborhood. And as I kept accumulating all this great material and these great stories, I thought, you know, this makes an even better story, and it really, in a sense, tells the story of the making of the United States. And so I felt like it was just a story that had to be told and put within one volume.
When you are telling the story of immigration, you really are telling the story of New York and vice versa, correct?
Yes, I really think that in order to understand how New York becomes, you know, the world capital it is today, that immigration is the defining feature of what makes New York. And so I felt like in writing the history of immigration to New York, in a sense, I was really writing a history of the city. And the book is very consciously portrayed that way.
Before we talk about specific waves of immigration, what is it about the city that was such a beacon to success?
That's a hard question to answer. And believe me, many, many city planners and boosters around the world have tried to duplicate what New York has. I think a couple of things are going on. So one is the fact that New York begins as New Amsterdam, run by the Dutch. And so whereas the English, who run the colonies to the north and the south, and then the French even, and the Spanish, who run other colonies in North America, they very much want to guard those colonies as being just for them. The Dutch, being such a small nation, have this long experience of kind of bringing in people from all over the rest of the world to kind of make their empire strong. And so New York from the beginning is much more open to outsiders than these other colonies are. And then I think that just kind of snowballs. And New York continues to have this reputation as a welcoming place, whereas Boston is seen as very Puritan, and Virginia is seen as very Southern and aristocratic. New York never has either of those reputations, and I think that just grows upon itself until New York becomes this place that everyone wants to go to.
Talk a little bit about each successive group coming to New York City, of how similar those stories are and how different those stories are.
The book focuses on the major immigrant groups to come to New York. It starts with the Dutch and then the English and then the Scots, quickly moves on to the Irish and the Germans. And then we focus on the East European Jews, Italians, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, West Indians, and then ultimately the Chinese, who are about to become the largest immigrant group in New York City. What they have in common, I think, are most things. Mostly it's a story of similarities, that the people who are coming to New York, whether it's the Scots in the 1700s like Alexander Hamilton or Italians in the 20th century, they're all looking to improve their lives and in particular to improve the lives of their children. A lot of immigrants, both earlier and later, think You know, I realize if I go to a new place, I'm going to start at the bottom of the economic ladder. I may never be able to assimilate very much. I may never be accepted, but my kids can be, and my kids can have these opportunities that I can never have and that they can never have if I stay in my homeland. You know, I think the differences are mostly surface differences, that some groups are able to adapt to New York more quickly than others and rise economically more quickly. Eastern European Jews, for example, were lucky to get into the garment trade just at the time when machine-made clothing was a booming industry, and so they're able to move up the ladder a little faster than, say, some other groups, at least economically. And so that tends to be the variation. Some groups do economically better faster than others, but for the most part, the story is very much one of similarities.
What do we learn about the whole process post-World War I when the gates are shut?
In the 1920s, Americans for the first time decide that they want to put strict limits on immigration to the United States, and that reverses what had been the tradition for three centuries. I think one of the biggest things we learn is that immigrants are kind of like water, that nothing can stop them when they want to come. And so just like, you know, you put up a dam and the water is going to keep coming if it really wants to, immigrants are going to keep coming if they really want to. So in the 1920s, you have a huge issue with illegal immigration. But in that period, the illegal immigrants are mostly Italians and East European Jews and Greeks. The country discovers that, you know, there's just no way to keep them out, that the border 10,000 miles long is just, you know, it's just too big, that there's no way to keep illegal immigrants out. And I think that says something about the story today, that if people want to go to where there's prosperity and where there's opportunity, it's really hard to stop them.
How much of this story is, and I obviously numbers are difficult in this case, but where New York is the place where people end up. That is their destination. And how much of it is a gateway to the rest of the United States of America?
That's a great question, and it's one that most people don't think about. Most immigrants who start out in New York don't spend the rest of their lives there. Now, sometimes that means only moving as far away as, say, Hoboken, New Jersey, across the Hudson River, within sight of New York skyscrapers. But in other cases, it means moving to New England, for example, up to, you know, it could be up to Albany or to Hartford or Bridgeport, Connecticut. It could be out to Chicago or the Midwest, even to California. So the majority of immigrants who come to New York will settle there, kind of earn some money, discover where the opportunities are, and move elsewhere. And it's really the minority who will stay their whole lives within New York City. Another thing a lot of immigrants do is they will start in New York City and then move to the suburbs, very much like the rest of Americans do. So in the period after World War I, you have lots of immigrants moving to suburbs, and that can mean Western Long Island, that can mean, you know, Westchester County or suburban New Jersey. And so very much people don't stay in New York as much as they start there and then move elsewhere.
So with that said, how much does that reflect the fabric of the five boroughs of New York?
I think the immigrants definitely take something of their experience in New York with them when they leave the city. As a result, you know, you'll find that the person who maybe starts out as a peddler selling fruits and vegetables on the street of New York will maybe move someplace else in New York State or New England and become a greengrocer. And so they definitely take their experiences they learn in New York and take them to wherever they end up going.
In the course of researching this book and looking at this 400-year history of immigration in New York, what surprised you about what had happened over that very long period of time in this country?
I think the biggest surprise was simply how much the experience of both the really older immigrants, the Dutch and the English and the Scots, and the very new immigrants, the Dominicans and the Chinese and the West Indians, how similar it was to the experience of immigrants kind of from the the golden age of you might say, of historical American immigration, the Irish and the Jews and the Italians, that they just seemed to undergo all of the same things. I had no idea, for instance, about how much illegal immigration there was of Jews and Italians and Greeks in the early 20th century. And then the other thing I think that I found surprising was how little immigrants have assimilated throughout American history. We tend to think that today's immigrants don't assimilate, and that's a huge change from the past. But you look at every generation of American immigration history, and immigrants did not assimilate very much. The people who lived around them, the native-born Americans, always said the same thing. These immigrants, they still speak with a thick accent. When we're not around, they speak in their native tongue. They cook the same old foods. They sing the same old songs. They yearn to go back to their quote-unquote homes. Our belief that immigrants in the past assimilated more than those today is really a myth, and that was one of the more surprising things I found.
Just in the first two lines of what we see in the Statue of Liberty of "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," how much do we mean that now?
Oh, that's tough. I think what polling shows is that a significant majority of Americans still feel that way. They see the United States as a land of immigrants, and they look at today's immigrants and see something of their own ancestors in them. There is, of course, the minority, but it's a very significant minority of Americans who don't look at it that way, who feel like the United States simply doesn't have the economic capacity to take in more people, that we can't supply enough for those who are already here. But one of the interesting things I found in working on the book is that feeling is actually as old as the country itself, that 100 years ago, 150 years ago, Americans were divided that way also. And so just as immigration is a long American tradition, a kind of uneasy feeling that immigrants might be overwhelming the country is also a long American tradition. And so that, to me, kind of gives me comfort, knowing that Americans have always managed to integrate immigrants into American society, even though we've always had that uneasy feeling about them.
The name of the new book is City of Dreams, the 400-year epic history of immigrant New York. Tyler, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure having you on the program.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Once again, Tyler Anbinder is professor of history at George Washington University. He is author of the new book, City of Dreams, the 400-year epic history of immigrant New York. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.